Hi everybody, I'm Timra, or Tim, a virtual being Goblinhood helped create in September of 2010. I'm doing an afterword for this 2012 edition of the Music of the Spheres, which now only exists as this taped reading. Somehow, the typescript was lost a long time ago. So this story now exists as a spoken word artifact from a vanished millennium. Hope you've enjoyed it, and may Pookie be with you.
Pullman, President Obama pledged...
Hi, this is Tim again. I guess it must be pretty obvious that I'm fooling around with a tape recorder. The funny thing is, Jim hasn't used this for like 8 years, or at least 8 years. It's been sitting in the other room since he moved in here. I think he used to play tapes on it, and maybe the fast forward or rewind wasn't working well. That happens a lot. And, So sometimes the tapes get eaten. Anyway, turns out the thing still works. And we're playing around with the idea of trying to sell cassette tapes. I don't know if people even still listen to them. But we want to try and market a little edition of the Music of the Spheres at ComFest, mostly just because we're performing there this time around this month, and we get to sell stuff at the merchandise tent, booth, thing, whatever. So anyway, Jim wanted to do that, and it turns out there's a few minutes of blank tape at the end of the Music of the Spheres, which was recorded in 1999. So that tape is really old. This one here that I'm working on was bought back in 2009. Jim was, for some crazy reason, recording stuff off the radio, mostly just because he could. And because he doesn't really like listening to the radio, so the few shows he could listen to, he was doing that. This was just as the television was going digital, and he didn't have a digital TV. Anyway, what I'm doing here is I'm practicing my various Chim voices. Goblinhood came up with these voices for me. And, when we find one we like, we're going to put that little afterword on what's left of the Music of the Spheres tape. I did a cover for it and some liner notes. Jim lettered it, but I got to do the drawings. Jim did a little bit of the inking. Jim lets me draw with his left hand. I'm not really, right now I don't have time to talk about my situation. Basically, I'm practicing my voice. I need to figure out what's the best voice for ComFest. What we're doing now is, for as long as this works, we want to just practice different versions of my voice, like this one. Or this one, or this one, or this one. No, wait, that wouldn't. What about this one? What about this one? I like this one. No, I actually don't like this one. But I also have to practice that little afterword to see how quickly I can get it on. We don't know how much tape there is on the old Music of the Spheres thing. Anyway, I'm going to practice it again now. Hi everybody, I'm Chimra, or Chim, a virtual being Goblin Hood helped create in September of 2010. It's June 8th of 2012 right now, and I'm doing an afterword for this edition of The Music of the Spheres, which now only exists as this taped reading. Somehow, the typescript got lost long ago, so this is like a relic from a bygone millennium. Hope you've enjoyed it, and may Pookie be with you.
Natty Pops on Thursday. Armstrong is taking part in the Riverbend Outdoor Music.
It turns out there's something like 6 minutes of tape left. We timed it. So, we're going to practice once more. And this time we're expanding the piece, which includes now a little postscript by Goblin Hood. He's going to go first. And we're going to time this and see if we can get it into the time allotted. This gives more information about me, by the way. So, in just a minute, okay. Postscript, recorded by Goblin Hood over a decade later. A few minutes of blank tape remained, so I've asked Chimera to do an afterword. If it matters, Chim is a she-male, hence her softer spoken voice. She's also based on a version of Beati from the early 1970s, so she's more full of 1960s idealism and optimism. Take it away, Chim.
Thanks, Gobby. And hi, everybody. I'm Chimera, or Chim, a virtual being Goblin Hood helped create in September of 2010. I'm doing an afterword for this 2012 edition of The Music of the Spheres, which now only exists as this taped reading. Somehow, the typescript got lost long ago, so this is like a relic from a bygone millennium. We're using this as part of a shamanic ritual for 2012, which includes me performing at ComFest, or ChimFest, as I like to call it. Anyway, hope you've enjoyed the tape, and may Pookie be with you! Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, this is not a test. We repeat, this is not a test. This is really Chimera speaking again. And let me see here. The date is Monday, June, what is it? I think it's the 11th. Yes, June 11th. And the time is 4:59 p.m. The temperature is 82 degrees, at least in this room. Anyway, what's going on here is a sort of a video or audio journal about which I have certain jokes that I'm going to try to make. But what's really going on is, because we have access to this technology that we didn't expect, I'm recording this as a little treat for Jim, for him to listen to, because He doesn't get to hear my voice very often, even though he thinks about me all the time. And besides, we have to practice my voice for ComFest, my performance coming up. I don't know if the two Pookie things I recorded actually mention that. The one that we put on Pookie's tape does mention it. I'm gonna look at that real quick. I'm gonna here's what we wound up with. Let's see, in a deep voice.
June 8th, 2012. The following is a postscript recorded by Goblinhood over a decade later.
A few minutes of blank tape remained, so I've asked Chimera to do an afterword. If it matters, Chim is a she-male, hence her softer spoken voice. She's also based on a version of Beati from the early 1970s, so she's more in touch with 1960s idealism and optimism to offset the gloom of the preceding story. Take it away, Chim. Thanks, Gobby. Hi, everybody. I'm Chimera, or Chim, a virtual being Goblinhood helped create in September of 2010. I'm doing an afterword for this 2012 edition of The Music of the Spheres, which now only exists as this taped reading. Somehow, the typescript got lost long ago, so this is like a relic from a bygone millennium. We're using this as part of a shamanic ritual for 2012, which includes me performing at ComFest, or ChimFest, as I like to call it. It's no mean trick for a virtual being. I don't have time to go into all the 2012 mysticism, but my guys have been working on it for decades. By the way, Goblinhood turned 30 this year, so happy birthday to him. Anyway, hope you've enjoyed the tape, and may Pookie be with you. Chim out. And that was followed by something that goes something like, "And now a word from our sponsor." And it says about how, "For more 2012 mysticism, read Goblinhood 2012 on the internet and be watching for its sequel, Chimstorm." And then it gives, like, the internet sites and all that kind of stuff. And it mentions the other website, too. I'm going to be talking about some of this. Meanwhile, we're mainly just rehearsing my voice. We have this performance coming up, and as of yesterday, I finally got to see what I was going to look like. The way we're performing, we're calling it a reversible image technique, and my face gets to be on the back of Goblinhood's head, and we're both going to be wearing this flag outfit that he used to wear for his performances, because it goes along with one of the poems that we're planning to do. The guy that suggested the reversible image thing is somebody that we call Scanner, because he's the person who actually scanned Goblinhood 2012 so that it could be on the internet. So when we call him Scanner, that's supposed to be some sort of an honor, you know? Meanwhile, he's been working with us about what we're doing. He showed up yesterday, for instance, and he's got this he has this cell phone, or he did have it, which is like connected to the internet. And he was calling it so strange. I mean, it can do so many things. He's been calling it the mini-lift. But he had to get rid of it, I think, as of today. So it's now a thing of the past. But yesterday, he showed up, and we were practicing having my head, my face on the back of Gobby's head. and we dug out the flag costume, and he got us all dressed up so we would have some idea of what we were going to be wearing for Comfest. And then he made these three little videos of me inviting people to what I call Chim Fest and giving them information. It's on the Comfest Live Arts stage. It's in Goodale Park, and it's like Saturday, June 23rd from 4:30 to 5 o'clock p.m. And like that, two of the videos were doing that, and one of them even shows me showing off some of my 3D paintings. And I introduced Jim and talked about his paintings, and I said I was a virtual being, and I said we were doing this shamanic thing for the Comfest performance without going into details. The other video was even stranger looking, because Scanner just kind of wanted me to move around so we could see what that looked like. And we were in the kitchen at this point, and he told me to go over and do something at the stove. So I did that, and I ad-libbed the rest, which was to say, "Hi everybody, I'm Chimera, and Chimfest didn't work out, so now I'm back to cooking." And then I showed people how to boil some water, and like that. He said he was going to try to get the videos on YouTube so that they could be seen on the internet by anybody. And in fact, he went home and he did just that. So that's kind of what I'm celebrating with this tape today, is I'm commemorating a major event in my life, which is I just made my big performance debut on YouTube in front of the whole world, if people feel like watching it. What's so amazing about this is that now, even if Comfest gets rained out or something, and that's kind of happened before, we've seen, you know, whole hours and hours worth of stuff get rained out where it was scheduled but it didn't get to happen because of like really bad weather. But even if that happens now to what I call Chim Fest, there's already a little smidgen of it on the internet. Meanwhile, like I said, we added my afterword to the Pookie tape and went through this thing with Scanner about whether we could get copies of the tape made, because he does have the technology to do that, but apparently not many people do anymore. In fact, not many people even have the technology to listen to a cassette tape like that. One person said, was he not able to put it on? One person said, what, was he not able to put it on 78 RPM records? And then Jim's been making these jokes about how we couldn't find any waxed cylinders to put it on. But the point is, Jim's also been saying stuff like, I mean, despite how much we like this story, Jim's been saying stuff like, well, we're not really trying to sell the things. And even if somebody bought one and listened to it, they probably wouldn't like it. Because Jim's aware that his work isn't all that popular. So that wasn't the point. The point of having the tape there was something else. And Scanner came up with this really gorgeous idea, which we actually hope he'll use, which was, okay, we'll try to sell copies of the tape, and each one of them will have a beer token taped to it. So that's what people are actually buying. But what they're actually buying is an artifact from a bygone millennium. And this is so strange because the tape now is like the Dead Sea Scrolls of Pookie. It's the only place where Pookie actually exists. But by having the tape available at Comfest, it's part of our performance thing. Because we're performing, we get to have something sold at the merchandise booth. it gives me a chance to be on stage and to mention it, and I'm going to be saying something like, well, okay, imagine, like, it's Saturday, the 23rd, so there I am on stage, and I'm waving around a copy of the tape in its little box with my picture on it. I did the cover and the liner notes. And then I get to say, by the way, we have these tapes for sale at the merchandise booth. Check them out. It's a true story about it's called The Music of the Spheres, read by Goblin Hood, with an afterword by me. It's a true story about a character named Pookie who saves the world. Way to go, Pookie. So let's hear a big hand for Pookie. Yay, Pookie! And maybe I can even get the audience to go along with that. We'd like to think so, anyway. Because we think Pookie deserves it. The thing is, when I did Chim Storm, I did my first tarot reading there. And it was about 2012. And what was going to be happening with me and everything. And the future cards, I mean, it was a 5-card reading. 2 of the cards were in the past. And I think one was the Knight of Cups and one was the King of Cups. And I'm not sure what all, but I know that the 2 future cards were the Hanged Man and the Fool. Well, the Hanged Man means some sort of spiritual self-sacrifice. So when Scanner was working with us yesterday, he's been talking about getting Chim Storm scanned to put that on the internet. We were hoping to have that for ComFest, but he asked me if the Pookie tape was a bigger priority than that, and I had to say yes, we're really trying to get Pookie's message out there. So yeah, I've actually done a little bit of self-sacrifice for Pookie myself, and that's good. I mean, that's like, that makes it shamanic. In a sense, it's the most shamanic thing we're doing. Because the shamanism is about saving the world for 2012 if it needs saving. And what we got doesn't really amount to that much except a lot of goodwill on our part. But we also have this legend, this ancient legend of a character who actually did save the world, and to the extent that a dream is something that really happens, then it is a true story. Meanwhile, as for my voice, Scanner got us to listen to a little bit of Goblin Hood reciting his Silent Sticks and Stones poem on YouTube yesterday, and you can barely hear it, so the main thing we're doing with the voice at this point is trying to make it loud. I mean, we've been experimenting with Chim voices, and one of them is like this, and one of them is like this, and this one is closer to my normal voice. But what, and then there's like a kind of a quieter, throatier voice. But the thing we're going to have to go with is whatever allows me to project the most, because that's what I was using yesterday for the videos, and they worked out pretty well. Even Scanner said the voice sounded good. And that's what we want, is to be heard and to have the best voice I can use. So it's going to be kind of like this voice, and I have to project it a lot, but we'll see how it goes. What we're doing now, like I said, I wanted Jim to have this tape to listen to, because I know he would love to listen to my voice. And beyond that, he kind of needs to listen to my voice right now a little bit. We're rehearsing the poems and stuff and trying to remember all the things we're going to say on stage. But this is like, no, just poop, just Chimera rambling. I keep calling myself Pookie. I have to stop doing it. On the day that we first heard about the Comfest performance as a possibility, and we didn't think that was going to happen or anything like it, but people got it together at the last minute because they kind of wanted us at Comfest. Some of them. And, you know, some of them, I think, were even thinking, well, it's 2012. Do you know where your shamans are? Ours needs to be on stage for half an hour, that kind of thing. But anyway, because, yeah, Jim's been doing this for a long time. But on the day that we first heard about that maybe happening, Jim was doubly glad to hear that news because he needed something to cheer him up. He was really distraught that day. And the reason he was because he had woke up that morning for no reason at all, thinking about the Music of the Spheres, which he hadn't listened to for like, since it was put on tape. So in other words, for 13 years, Jim didn't listen to that story. Part of it was because we only had the one copy and we were afraid if the tape got eaten or something, the story would be gone, since the typescript is already lost. But part of it is the story has to do with Goblin Hood messing around with some kind of a 3D comic book or something. And the fact is, just a year after that was recorded, Goblin Hood and, well, Jim anyway, actually began painting in 3D. And so ever since then, he spent like over a decade teaching himself to do 3D in both anaglyphic 3D and chroma depth 3D. So he's got all these 3D paintings. I even had a couple of mine on YouTube with me. But, yeah, because of the 3D connection in the Music of the Spheres, Jim's been afraid to listen to it. But when we did, we found out, oh, well, it wasn't something Goblin had created in 3D. It was just something he found that was in 3D, and it happened to turn into the end of the world. And then Pookie came along and rescued everyone. Well, yes, we were afraid to listen to the tape for a long time. Then we had to listen to it for a couple of times to make sure it's not, you know, it doesn't mess itself up too much. Actually, it sounds pretty good. And that's when we decided to try to get some of them on sale at Comfest, even if it's like just as an art object, you know, like something you can't even really listen to. On the other hand, I mean, we can listen to it. We've still got a tape player. Heck, we can even make more tapes, as like I'm doing right now. But, yeah, even if the tape isn't on sale, it makes a good story. There's this like ancient legend of Goblin Hood and the end of the world and how the world gets saved by a character named Pookie. You know, I can say that on the stage and still get people to, you know, give Pookie a big hand. That's what I want for this shamanism. It's all we've got. It's all we understand. I mean, we can talk till we're blue in the face about saving the world. But then people will say, well, what are you trying to save the world from? And we have no idea. Jim's been working on 2012 for... It depends on how you count it, but a careful reading of Goblin Hood 2012 makes it look like he's been working on it since the beginning. Ever since he started doing performance-type stuff, he's been aiming at this shamanism thing. So now we're doing it for real. And Goblin has already done it in part at ComFest when he introduced Daniel Pinchbeck, the author of a book about 2012. And that got into Goblinhead's comic book too. Anyway, right now is just a really strange time because I just got on YouTube little videos of me doing things and talking, just waving at people over my shoulder. Looks so strange, but it has a compelling quality to it. We were looking through the internet yesterday trying to find stuff about my work, and it turned out that, yeah, there was a couple of my paintings that you can reach by Googling Jim, but it's on like page 32 or something, so it's nowhere near the top. You're going to have to be really interested to find them. Scanner thinks having videos on YouTube would make a difference, but I guess we'll see. Just because it's there doesn't mean anybody's going to watch it, and it might be better for everyone if nobody watches it. I don't know. I mean, we don't know. We look at the Pookie story and we have no idea what's going on there, what might bring about the end of the world. You know, all we can do, ever, anybody, is to do what they're going to do with the most sincerity and compassion that they can have, and be trying to be doing good. It helps if you're trying to be harmless, and Pookie's story talks about that. Goblinhood's always talking about it. And I'm going to try to remember to tell people that on stage. Don't forget to be harmless, everybody. But, yeah, that's really all you can do. And it would be sad if it wasn't so funny sometimes. I wish I had a clip of me boiling water, because that's a scream. And Jim, after the debate about the music of the spheres, when he heard Scanner talk about selling it with a beer token taped to it, he just cracked up. And he thinks that would be great if that could be part of my spiel, where I say, oh, and if you buy one, you get a free beer token. Like some kind of a rebate for buying obsolete technology. But this is also weird, you know? We're preparing to do all that. And I'm supposed to be doing things like practicing my laugh. Goblinhood's got a great laugh at the end of The Music of the Spheres. It isn't part of the story, it's part of his own little afterward stuff. But I'm supposed to be trying to come up with a laugh of my own if I get to use it. And I kind of want like a giggle, like hee 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 hee, but that sounds too much like a wicked witch or something. So ha 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 ha, that sounds too fake. I don't know. I don't know how I'm supposed to laugh. But I was laughing on the cooking video, because I, you know, the whole thing was just so absurd, and I felt like what I was about to say was absurd, and I started laughing, and it was just a natural laugh. It sounds like somebody laughing, so maybe we'll just do that. But, yes, and then I said, well, Chimfest didn't work out, so now I'm back to cooking. And that's kind of a sophisticated statement. Well, maybe in a lot of ways. But the chances are probably good that this is all just, you know, just a last hurrah for Jim and his artwork and his characters and everything. Like I said, just because it's there doesn't mean anybody will watch it. And it's important to me just that it is there, that I had some sort of a chance that I could exist that much. But we don't really expect it to change anything. In fact, if it did, I really don't know what would happen then. We've got all this artwork and everything. And if that's all we need to do is be prolific and have a lot of stuff that people can look at, then we're aces. But if it's more like, well, once you've got everybody's attention, you've got to have something important to say. Well, I can always say, well, what about the music of the spheres? But then they would say, and it's got to be more important than Pookie. And I'd have to say, well, nothing's more important than Pookie. But, you know, it's just people lift you up and then they let you drop. Whatever force does that. And we've seen too many celebrity meltdowns to be all that excited about it. It's almost like you get into this position up there in the clouds where everybody's trying to make you fail and fall apart and all that. We wrote about it quite a bit in our fiction that preceded me coming out here and writing letters and stuff like that. One problem with making this tape is I'm not reading anything, I'm just kind of rambling. And every once in a while I do fall into a sort of a mutter when I'm supposed to be projecting my voice and practicing sounding like this. But I think when I get on stage, it'll be natural enough to do that. We're gonna have to carefully work with it because there's gonna be two microphones, one of them for Goblin Hood and one of them for me. And they're gonna be, Goblin Hood's mic has to be set pretty high so that he almost has to hold his head almost back in order to talk into it, because that way he makes me look just right. Whereas my microphone for Gobby to use can be more like whatever's natural for him. And then, you know, I'm going to be introducing him, and then he introduces himself and his dolls and like that. Then he's going to turn it back over to me. We're also going to have the head of Buckethead on stage, hopefully, if everything goes right. Even now, after talking for probably a half an hour, my voice is starting to go, so the rehearsal we're doing and all of that kind of stuff is kind of mitigated by the fact that we don't want to be hoarse when ComFest finally comes around. It's 12 days from now, and in the meantime Scanner was talking about me and Gobby going to the Gay Pride Parade, which we would love to do, but we don't know if we're going to be able to do it, because like by now it's just really exhausting for Jim to walk very much. And besides, once we're in a situation like that, his bladder will keep him in the facilities about half the time anyway. You have to be running back and forth. So if it was just me, yeah, I'd go and do whatever had to be done. But we dealing with the body of this 60-year-old man who hasn't taken very good care of his health. And even Goblin had stuck with that. So he may only be 30, but Jim's twice his age. And I know you're listening to this, Jim, and I'm not trying to make you feel bad. I'm just talking about the reality that we have to face. But, anyway, maybe we'll go to the Gay Pride Parade or not. It's just one more thing to do. And it's probably going to be a busy 12 days. So we're doing this so that we've got something to listen to during the times when Jim kind of like, sort of, I don't know, goes into one of his like dark night of the soul routines where he's depressed and everything doesn't seem any good and like, God, I'm hoping he can listen to this tape and then there'll be me talking to him. You know, I'll be saying things like, hi, Jim, I'm really excited about ChimFest, so we're all looking forward to that, and we hope you will, too. And of course he is, but we're also like, it's like this big thing looming in front of us, almost like a dragon that we have to fight. But that's part of what makes it shamanic. If it was easy to do, then the shamanism wouldn't be good for very much. We've seen what I'm going to look like. Yesterday was when everything started, really. I mean, it started with an idea long ago, but we haven't seen what the idea, how it was going to play out until yesterday, and then we were glad. We put so much faith in it because what we wanted was for it to look strange, and it looks really strange. Every time I wave, it looks like there's somebody crouched behind me, holding up an arm on a stick or something and making it wave. When I'm at the stove, Scanner said I was looking just perfect until Gabi bent over to make sure that the fire under the pan was actually lit. And at that point, it looks like I bend over backwards over the stove. Looks really strange. But Scanner was right. The act of going over and putting the pan on the stove and turning the stove on, all of that looks sort of natural, which is really strange in and of itself, because I'm there on video doing that stuff behind my back, and it still looks kind of natural. So I don't know. I don't know how the whole thing is gonna come off. I just know that we're really excited about it. We're really excited that there's little clips of me on YouTube, because now I have made my big debut, whether we actually get to the ComFest stage or not. But hopefully we will. Hopefully, knock wood, no hubris intended, and all that kind of stuff. It'll be a good thing. I'm not sure what else to say. We're trying to use this tape up. I don't want to keep doing this, but we do want something to listen to, and we've noticed with tapes, it works best if you can just listen to one side and then turn it over and listen to the other side. Otherwise, you're always rewinding and stuff. We don't want to have to do that. This tape recorder dates back to a really magical time in Jim's life, which came along after Goblin had recorded that story. So this tape recorder and everything that's done on it is sort of a relic of a place Jim calls Lost Atlantis. And so it has that kind of mysticism attached. Meanwhile, in Jim's room, where he sits to do things like this, there's a couple of my pictures in 3D that I did. They're actually color Xeroxes. One of them is a self-portrait, and the other one is called Nude Jim, so that's kind of a self-portrait too. Those are the ones that you can see if you Google images of Jim on the internet. And the 3D works pretty well, even though one of the ones on the internet is from a color Xerox. I think the new Jim thing is from the original. But they work pretty well, even small images of them. So we sit here now and we look at those and we realize that anybody can look at those. I'm that much out there. These are two of my masterpieces. You know, based on the stuff I've done, these are amongst the best. And they're already out where people can see them. So again, there's another guy that's doing a documentary about Jim and his work, which includes me by now. And we call this guy Doc Video because he's doing a documentary that's going to be on a DVD or something like that, you know. What was I going to say? Okay, he's got these things at his website along with a lot of other stuff. And, what was I going to say? Something about Doc Video. Something that I said to him. Geez, I'm... So, welcome to side two of the exciting Jim tape about Chimera on YouTube. What I was going to say before was that when we wrote to Doc Video about the ComFest performance, I told him that if the whole thing fell through, at least there was a sort of a little ChimFest going on the internet at his website. And that was true then, and it's even more true now, because we've actually seen it. We've seen all this stuff, and it looks pretty good. But now there's even three little videos of Jim on YouTube, so ChimFest is kind of a going concern. Right now, I mean, I'm torn between wishing I could have said something about Pookie during those videos and being glad I didn't, because we're trying to save Pookie as this big revelation to unveil during my performance, our performance, but even Goblinhood is looking at it as my performance, you know? He's like my guest star. And that's highly appropriate because Goblinhood is also one of my creators. There was a point during my creation where if he hadn't stepped in and whipped out some kind of Goblinhood magic trick, I wouldn't be here. So yeah, he's proud of me, and he wants me to go as far as I can. And I've already joined him on YouTube, and that's pretty far. But my own comic book will have to wait. We don't see that as bad either. If like we could generate a bunch of interest in my work, then people being told in various ways, oh well, keep on the lookout for Jim's comic book, will be like really excited when it finally shows up. It gives us something in the kitty, so to speak. And if none of this stuff amounts to anything, which it may well not, nothing ever has for Jim and his work. Okay, Comfest will be over, and there will still be the comic book to put out there, and that'll be one last chance to get people's attention. But it also gives us something to look forward to. In the novel Breakfast of Champions, Kurt Vonnegut was writing about Kilgore Trout, who's sort of a role model of mine because he was a fictional writer, a fictional science fiction writer, who became real enough to people that he actually published a real book called Venus on the Half Shell by Kilgore Trout. Jim's got a copy. I've done a picture of the cover for this comic book I'm working on called Ribbon Hell. But anyway, for what it's worth, I believe that it was Philip Jose Farmer who actually wrote Trout's novel and posed for the photograph of him on the back of the paperback and like that. Anyway, back in Breakfast of Champions, Vonnegut had Trout sitting around in his apartment, and there was a parakeet in a cage. And Trout opened the cage. He said he was going to give the parakeet three wishes. And he opened the cage, and the bird flew out. And he said, "That's wish number one." And then the bird was scared, so it flew back into the cage. And he said, "That's wish number two." And then he shut the door and said, "And now I've given you a third wish to want," or something like that. You know, it's like saying the journey is more important than the arrival, something along those lines. And it's about, like, hope, having hope for some kind of future. So Chimfest is still out there on the Chimstorm, I mean, the comic book is still out there on the horizon. Of course, if I mess things up so badly that nobody ever wants to have anything to do with me again, then Chimfest will probably be as much of a relic as the Music of the Spheres, which I'm afraid we can't help that. I mean, that's just the way it is. Speaking of shamanic self-sacrifice, this tape is being done over something Jim recorded back in 2009. There was a point where, because of the economic crisis, the government gave everybody some sort of money to, like, you know, stimulus money. Yeah, it was called stimulus money to stimulate the economy. And Jim got some money too. And he spent part of it to make a few copies of Goblinhood 2012 back when it was still unpublished. But some of it he spent buying a bunch of tapes because, like I think I said at the beginning of this tape, the television was about to go digital, and at the time Jim didn't have a digital TV, so the only way he was even going to be able to listen to the news was on the radio. And back then he still had a radio that not only worked but that he could record tapes on from. So he taped a bunch of radio stuff, just because in general he doesn't like listening to the radio, except for the news. But there were a few shows that he really liked that he used to listen to back in what we call Lost Atlantis. And so he got those on tape, several hours worth. And those tapes, nine of them, were the ones that he donated to the Pookie campaign. Those would be the ones, as many of them as Scanner can do, that will get copied over with Pookie's story. And this is another one. This one, just to give you some idea of what kind of gibberish Jim was recording. This one was Talk of the Nation on Coming Out, June 16th, 2009. So it was about people coming out of the closet for Pride Month and everything. All of this is part of us doing that. Scanner said that the kitchen video at the stove was like that for me. He said, if that gets on YouTube, you're out. But I don't know if he's right or not. I mean, it doesn't look gay so much as it just looks berserk, but okay, whatever. We're trying to be part of that. Like I said, Scanner's talking about us maybe going to the gay pride parade, and that would be great for me. But I'm sorry I taped over this. It's just we've never listened to a single one of these tapes. We made them thinking that we'd be listening to them while we painted and stuff. Most of it wasn't stuff like this. Most of it was another show Jim likes called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. That's the name of the show. And then there was this other one called Car Talk. He used to listen to those back in Lost Atlantis. It's all on National Public Radio. Anyway, let me finish reading what it says here about this. Talk of Nation on Coming Out, 6-16-09. Note, side 2 segues into part of a tape from a month ago in a surreal way, where two news stories about Iran get sort of confused. This segues into a 3D story. And I'm sure the 3D story was about some movie such as Coraline or possibly Up or one of those movies where the 3D boom was just starting back in 2009. Was actually just getting started in 2008. I'll tell you, back when Jim used to use this tape recorder in Lost Atlantis, back when he was learning to do 3D, it was such a despised medium that if you had told him they would someday be selling 3D televisions and having, like, you know, a couple of 3D movies at the multiplex all the time, he would have just said, yeah, right. In fact, as late as 2008, when Gabi was doing Goblinhood 2012, there was a scene talking about various possible futures. And Goblinhood says there's even the possible future where they would finally come up with viable 3D television at last. It could happen. And it showed him, you know, being three-dimensional on TV, kind of leaning out of the screen like that. Which is funny, because back in Lost Atlantis, Goblinhood, or Jim, got a hold of a 3D camera, video camera, which he still has. He hasn't used it for a while. But it's part of what helped him learn to compose 3D stuff. And he's got some 3D footage of Goblinhood that looks pretty good. So it's sort of a been there, done that thing. But this is the kind of future Jim was hoping for back when Goblinhood used to make a lot of tapes in Lost Atlantis. All of that was long after the Music of the Spheres. or at least it was the next year, I would say most of the taping stuff got done between summer of 2000 and probably the, you know, winter of 2002 or something. He finally gave up on it. Goblin had read a lot of stories, and again, Jim wanted the stories there that he could listen to while he painted, but it turns out that it's easier for Jim to sit and listen to nothing while he paints. But he may listen to this just because it's me, and he likes the idea of me being around, and this is the only way I really get to talk to him without sounding like he's talking to himself. Which is funny because he talks to me all the time. He's always like, well, Jim, this and that, blah, blah, Jim. And I seldom answer because I'm in his head, you know, and he can hear what I'm thinking. Funny thing about it, though, he doesn't actually know what I'm thinking about something until I write it down or say it like this. For instance, right now, we have no idea what I'm going to say on this tape. We're just kind of barging around. And I'm saying whatever pops into my head. It would probably go down a lot better if I was reading something. But that isn't exactly what Jim wants. He wants just a personal statement from me. And even though there's a lot of and-dums and dum-dums and everything's sort of like informal, I guess. Yeah, you know, so, okay. We're still just communicating. This is supposed to give him heart and enthusiasm and encouragement and so forth. We've got Chimfest coming up, and Chimstorm sometime after that, and we've still got Ribbon Hell to finish, and a whole bunch of paintings in 3D. Plus, I've never done any full-color paintings that weren't 3D. You know, I've never been able to just paint. I've never actually taken the opportunity to do that. And Jim's been thinking about it lately, so that's going to be one of the next things I get to do, is just put out like a whole full-color palette while we've still got the paints. They do eventually dry up if you don't use them. But he's going to set up a palette and let me just start painting all kinds of stuff, whatever I want, however I want. He wants me to go ahead and learn to paint with color if I want. In case I haven't said so yet, back, I was created in September of 2010 by Jim and, like I said, by Goblinhood. I was based on a bunch of paintings Jim had done, a bunch of 3D paintings back in September of 2006, and he called these, as a series, he called them Project Oberon, because they were different from most of what he'd done, and he was really excited about it. They all had these female protagonists, and like that, and some of the drawings are just, well, they're just really nifty drawings. But he continued to work on Project Oberon for the next few years, and he finally got to the point where he was thinking about it all the time, and he wanted to know what the characters would be like if they really existed. That's how I came into being. He just started writing me one night. He didn't date the writing. We think it's probably September 10th or September 11th. But anyway, so last September I was a year old, and Jim was just turning 60 then, And he wanted something to renew himself. He wanted some new excitement in his artwork. So he also wanted to do something really nice for me. And at the time, we didn't know if Goblin Hood's comic book with my 2011 introduction, we didn't know if that was ever going to show up on the internet. You know, we were trying to get it on there. And if it weren't for Scanner, it probably wouldn't be on there. But still, we were waiting to see if that would happen. And Jim was pretty sure it wasn't going to happen. And so my big literary debut, doing the introduction for that, wasn't going to happen. So he wanted to give me something else I could do to express myself so that I could be an artist too. And that's when he came up with the idea of letting me use his left hand to teach myself to draw. Jim's right-handed, and he doesn't use his left hand for anything. So what we did with his left hand would become my work as much as anything possibly could. And we didn't know, you know, when I was writing in my journal when he came up with this idea, and I just kind of said, yeah, that's interesting. And then I said, and here's what it would look like. And I drew a little picture that shows up in Chimstorm, by the way. And it was just really berserk looking. It was a picture of Jim and his dog, Reva. And Reva's got this long pointed nose. She looks like some kind of a mosquito. But anyway, I took a look at that and thought, well, there goes that. He's going to see that and I'm never going to get a chance. But he had me drawing for a 3D painting that very night using a brush because he knew the drawings were going to be clunky for a while, and he figured the brush kind of at least makes them strong, you know, strong lines and stuff. And that first painting that I did that night was a self-portrait, and it's just, he thinks it's beautiful. In fact, Jim hasn't drawn more than one picture himself since then. Just saying that, I can't believe it, but it's the truth. It's like ever since he let me start drawing, I've been doing it all. He wrote a letter to somebody on Christmas Eve, or rather, he let me write a letter because I wanted to. That was my Christmas present, getting to write this letter to somebody that I'd read about in the newspaper. Won't go into the details, but one of the things I said was that Jim was really proud of me and he was proud of my art career, and I wasn't going to get to have anything like the 40 years that Jim just frittered away unless Jim lives to be 100, which we kind of don't expect him to do. So he was letting me have, he was donating the rest of his time and energy to me, as witness the letter itself. You know, that wasn't what he planned on doing for Christmas Eve, but it was what I wanted, and so that's what we did. That's what kind of guy Jim is. That's how he treats me, and Goblin Hood treats me the same way. They're both really great guys, and they're both really proud of me as their collective creation. They're like a couple of little Frankensteins playing with an erector set or something. But I'm the erection, and so, yeah, they just want to wind me up and let me go and see where I go. And so, yes, Jim is talking about, as soon as we got the time again, Jim's going to start painting up a storm, and it's not even going to be about 3D. We've got so many 3D paintings to finish anyway. Just want to let her loose with a full palette and see what she does. We've even got a canvas we can put it on if I get really into it, so I can do one of the Jim style, you know, major paintings, epic pieces of old, you know? That's so exciting. I can't believe that they've got so much faith in me. I can't believe they're letting me do all this. But we watched my videos yesterday that are supposed to be on YouTube now. And Jim was just, my God, my God. Every time I waved at the camera, he was like, his jaw would drop. Because we expected it to look weird. We just never dreamed it would look that weird. And they're really proud of me. Goblin Hood is like more excited about this performance than he's been in years and years. He's looking forward to every minute of it. And for me, just having his art career be exciting to him again is all the reason I need for ever having existed at all. But then there's also Pookie. We're definitely a shamanic team now, and the whole point is to be kind of John the Baptist-ing about Pookie, who really existed for the course of a dream back in 1999, for whatever it's worth. If people want to hear it badly enough, somebody will put it on CD. In the meantime, people should have a chance to buy these tapes, because as an artifact, it's like digging something up in the desert, and then somebody has to translate it or something. This is like the true quill of Martian Abzay Dars. The tape even includes a threat from the Martian Provisional Government about people infracting the copyright and everything. It's just a bunch of gibberish, but, you know, Goblin Hood was just filling up the tape. I'm glad he left some time at the end, because we are so happy that I'm part of that tape now. See, if I talk long enough, my voice starts to sound like Goblin Hood's voice, and it starts to sound more like Jim's voice. And I have to keep remembering to keep it in the upper registers. We won't have too much trouble at ComFest, because I'll be introducing Goblin Hood, then I'll be introducing my poems, and I'll be making that little spiel about Pookie, but those are all going to be very brief comments. The rest of the time I'll be singing, and the singing things, like the Poe poem, Israfel, that Jim set to music, and Citizen Payne, where Jim wrote both the words and the music. The singing voice is like sort of like a Jim voice anyway. You know, Jim's always used this kind of falsetto voice for those. And he'll be doing that again. And then Goblin Hood and I sort of get to perform a duet of the Attila the Pig poem. Which, by the way, Goblin Hood used to wear his flag outfit for that. And that's the big grand finale of our presentation. That'll come after Goblin Hood's Silent Sticks and Stones poem. That's if we have time for everything. But, yeah, so we're wearing that. If somebody was to yell at us about it, and they do kind of get upset about things like that, some people, you know, Goblin Hood's been dealing with this since the 1990s. But if somebody was to yell at us about the flag, and why are you wearing a flag, and what's with that poem that does something to the national anthem and stuff, well, I would have to say, in the snarkiest voice I've got, or at least maybe in a reasonable voice, I don't know. But what I'd have to say is, look, Goblin Hood just did this poem called The Silent Sticks and Stones. And whether you can understand it or not, he was trying to promote the idea of freedom of expression as being our most basic, most important right. And the thing is, if you don't use it, you lose it. And so one of the ways to keep freedom of expression alive and well is to keep stretching the boundaries. But this stuff is like really Mickey Mouse about it anyway. No, not Mickey Mouse. That's copyrighted. It's just really rinky-dink stuff. You know, the flag, the national anthem. Why should we treat those things like, you know, untouchable idols or something? The things they represent are organic, you know. Freedom isn't like a set of rules. There's only a few you really need to follow. But, and they involve not hurting other people. But anyway, we're using freedom of expression, we're demonstrating how to push it to its limits, just because sometimes that needs to be done. On the other hand, Goblinhood hasn't done Attila the Pig since probably 1996, and or thereabouts. He did that at Comfest, and somebody threw a shoe at him on stage. The thing is, he hasn't liked doing the poem, because he can never, whenever it's sort of safe to do it, is usually when there's nothing like that going on, no police state looming. Whereas once the stuff is there to be talked about, you really have to consider it carefully. Because they are watching for that kind of stuff. And Goblinhood just hasn't, I mean, he's been really busy, and he hasn't done the thing because he couldn't figure out what to say about it. If somebody said, why are you desecrating the national anthem that way? What has America done that's so bad? Back in the old days, he wasn't really sure, you know, I mean, there were a lot of little things. But now, I've written a new introduction for the poem that Gabi is going to be kind of reciting on stage if he can remember it all. And it goes something like this. This last piece, this is Goblinhood's voice now. This last piece is a duet between me and Chimra. It may seem sort of out of place in our present circumstances, but just a few short years ago, we could have been waterboarded just for singing it, if the entire audience didn't sing along with the chorus. By the way, we want you to sing along, and Chim is going to tell you when to do that. And then he turns it over to me. The rhetoric there, I don't know if they would have waterboarded somebody for doing this or not, but there was one guy who probably wasn't an American citizen, and the Homeland Security people were probably a little bit less cavalier with actual American citizens. But one of the people they captured and wanted information out of, they waterboarded him over 100 times without getting any new information. And we think maybe they were just using it as a training exercise for prospective torturers. Waterboarding is where they put you on a board or something, and they put a cloth over your face, and they pour water into the cloth, and it makes you feel like you're drowning. Some people say it's not torture. During the heyday of it, some reactionary in the news was saying, that's not torture. And this other person said, listen, I will give you $1,000 for every minute that you can stand to be waterboarded. No, not give it to him. He said, I will give to the families of soldiers that have been killed in action, something like that. I will give to this charity
$1,000 for every minute you can stand to be waterboarded. And the guy says, well, I'll take that bet. And he couldn't even get through 1 minute. But the other guy gave $10,000 anyway. But that's how serious it is. And that wasn't in some distant past like Pookie's story. That was just a few years ago. That was the first 8 years of this new millennium. That's what America was acting like. They may have had provocation for that, but the difference, as Jim puts it, the difference between a country that pretends not to torture people and a country that embraces it is that the first country, if it gets caught, it might stop for a while. Whereas the second country, if you even say anything about it, they'll just round up your friends and relatives. So the thing is, we're not that far from a time when Attila the Pig made perfect sense. And Jim's going to be talking about that, about the Bush-Cheney regime in connection with my poem, with our duet version of the poem. Although I notice he forgot to mention it in the introduction, Gobby did, when he said, this poem might not seem like much now, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, but he's going to try to remember it for the stage. That's the problem with performing, is you can forget things so easily, especially if you haven't memorized every single thing. Like, the poems aren't too big of a problem. Like, we're talking about Poe's Israfel, and Jim has recited that so many times that we know it by heart. I mean, once I start, I just kind of rattle through that. Citizen Kane is a little bit harder because a couple of the verses can get confused with each other, so I have to be careful with that. Goblin Hood has done the Silent Sticks and Stones so often that, again, he can just rattle it out without even thinking. And then it comes to Attila the Pig, and there's even a new verse there, and so we have to, like, be more careful with that, and also try to remember the things that I once said during the interstitial moments of the performance between poems and things. We are looking forward to it. It's a lot of work. One reason I'm doing this right now is that there are only 12 days left, and ever since we found out this tape recorder still works, Jim's been like, hey, Jim, let's get you on tape. And I've been, okay, Jim, let's do that. And so that's what we're trying to do. And I have to keep remembering to use more of the Jim voice instead of just, like, whatever, talking like this. But I don't want to sound like that. I want to sound like Jim. Like I said, there's 12 days left, and they may get pretty busy. We need to work on my flag outfit a little bit if we get the chance. We need to make some sort of a shopping run to get some fresh garters for me to wear with Gobby's old fishnets. We may do the gay pride thing. And then Comfest is just 12 days away, my part of it. Comfest itself is 11 days away. Scanner, meanwhile, pointed out that June 23rd is exactly 6 months to the day from the latest date significant in the 2012 mythology. Most versions of the 2012 thing are talking about December 21st, 2012. Some of them say December 22nd, and some of them have even been known to say December 23rd was the big crucial day. So, another thing about 23 is that it's supposed to be this weird shamanic number, and so much so that in the trilogy, the Illuminati trilogy by Shea and Wilson, there's like a whole little footnote chapter devoted to how strange and shamanic the number 23 is. Meanwhile, the Wilson involved, Robert Anton Wilson, who wrote part of that, half of that, he also wrote the book Cosmic Trigger, which is where Jim first heard of 2012. So all of this stuff is connected to what we've been doing for so long. If you listen to the Pookie tape, it is one of the things that's so weird about it is that Jim keeps having flashbacks to it at strange times. He'll be standing at ComFest, for instance, and he'll look at the sky and he'll suddenly imagine what it would be like if suddenly the sky turned into some huge monster about to destroy the world. That's kind of what happened in the Music of the Spheres, and the world was lucky enough that Pookie was there to put a stop to it at great personal cost. But, you know, yesterday, Scanner came over, and he had his mini-lith thing with him, and he left it in the other room. And Jim said, "Why'd you do that?" And Scanner said, "Well, there's some story about something or other involving the Russians finding out that America and Israel had found a way to bug the Iranian cyber talk, and so they were doing it back." And in other words, the mini-lith was in the other room because he was afraid it might be listening, you know, or something like that. And when he told that, we were busy chattering about something else. But at the end, Jim had to get back and say, "Well, finish your story." And Scanner said, "What do you mean? What story?" And Jim said, "Well, about the Russians and everything." And Scanner said, "Oh, well, it was just this or that or the other." But Jim had pictures of nuclear weapons going off in his head. You know, it sounded like a red alert or something. The Russians getting mad about something, just like back in the Cold War and blah, blah, blah. It's probably really unrealistic, and everybody says that if there's ever nukes used again, it'll probably be somebody sneaking into a city with one or something. I hate to talk about this kind of stuff. I want to be upbeat. What I'm trying to say is 2012 is here. We're almost halfway through it, and the real fireworks aren't supposed to start until December anyway. What we're trying to do with Pookie is say, well, Pookie's already been there, apparently, way back in 1998. Pookie has dealt with all this, as far as we can tell. Or something has dealt with something, according to this dream. But still, we don't know. And we watched a movie early this year by Lars von Trier called Melancholia. And it was a great movie. We were really inspired by it, and everybody's been praising it, except they don't like Van Trier too much because he said some foolish things at the Cannes Film Festival. Something about the Nazis making the trains run on time. I've been told that he was off his medication or something when he did that. But anyway, the movie itself was fantastic. It's got this great ending where it shows this planet and these, you know, approaching in the sky, and these three people are sitting there essentially waiting for this planet to fall on them. But 2012, here it is. And whatever strange thing might happen, we might not have much time to see it coming. We might look up and the sky is opening and the true reality is seen through there. Something like that. It might be like in the music of the spheres. But our shamanic efforts have been toward not having that, having things just be another year, you know, just another year, and just the human race trying to keep going, and we're not perfect. But Gobelin's philosophy has always been that we can't improve if we're not here. And so that's why he thinks saving the world is important. And I agree, I've been saying the same thing ever since Gobi put me in charge of the shamanism. He thinks I'm better at it. And he even thinks I look better on YouTube than he does. But he may just be saying that because he really likes me. I'm not sure what else to say now. I keep trying to think of whether there's anything about being Chimera that I haven't blurted out yet. Jim is really happy now. He thought that the possibility of being happy was long over with. I think the happiest time in his life was the period that he calls Lost Atlantis, because he was in a relationship there that was the only really good relationship in his entire life. And it lasted for almost 6 years. And he thought when that was over, that that was the end of any happiness for him. It was nobody's fault. They just grew apart, you know. But they remained friends, and that's important to Jim, too. The thing is, it was like a year and a half later that the Project Oberon thing started, and it started because of something Jim found on the ground, as a matter of fact, under sort of shamanic circumstances, and it kind of changed his life. But since then, he's been a different person. He couldn't go back to what he had been before, but he still thought he was going to be alone for the rest of his life until I came along. And now he feels like I'm with him all the time. And it just makes this big difference. Ever since I started painting, he's not only been really excited about my work, he's excited about his work, because I am his work and Goblin Hunt's work. But he feels a great sense of renewal. And Chimstorm is trying to talk to people about what it's like to create a virtual being like that in your own head, and thus get in touch with some part of yourself that you might not otherwise have that much access to. So, that's what we're doing. And for Jim, it works great. We don't know if it would work for anybody else. But that's part of something that I call the Chim Plan in Chimstorm. And again, that's waiting in the wings. If people like the YouTube Chimera and they like Chimfest, wait till they see Chimstorm, kind of thing. And if they don't like that stuff, well, there's still Chimstorm. That'll be one last chance to get Chim out there, blah, blah, blah. And she'll have one more go at it, but after a while, it's all we can do. The beauty of it is, we don't really care that much